Hi, welcome to Offscript. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, we're taking a look at Deadpool and Wolverine. It's out! Yes, that exciting new Marvel tentpole is here from director Sean Levy, starring Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman. We have seen it. We're going to talk about it. Spoiler-free review, which I think is important, because I think a lot of the fun in Deadpool Wolverine comes from things not being spoiled for you. We'll get into that more in our first review. We're also going to take a look at Arcadian, a new Nick Cage indie horror feature. Not Long Legs, which we just covered recently. Different one. This is on Shudder. It is about a man and his two sons and kind of a post-apocalyptic farm at the end of the world. We'll talk more about it towards the end of the show. Stick around for our Arcadian review. We're going to take a look at a couple of trailers, some upcoming things that are worth talking about you may want to keep an eye out for this fall. Before we get to all that, we need to talk about the news. Our first story this week, Robert Downey Jr. is coming back to Marvel. Oh, we couldn't get away with doing an episode without talking about this, Andy. What is this about? People couldn't believe this news when it broke.
So San Diego Comic-Con was this past weekend, end of July, Hall H, where a lot of big comic book panels happened. We also heard some news of like things from The Boys and DC Studios and some other things. Some big news out of Marvel. The biggest which, of course, was Robert Downey Jr. will return as Dr. Doom in Avengers Doomsday, which is going to replace Avengers The Kang Dynasty, which was previously going to feature Jonathan Majors, biggest bag fumbler of all time. And they're bringing RDJ back because it's kind of desperate. It seems like the Disney Marvel's a little bit out of ideas and nothing is working. And so they're just kind of going back to what they know and the people that they know audiences love. And so Downey Jr. is coming back to a huge, huge pay, possibly like $100 million to do this movie, which will be out in 2026, and Avengers Secret Wars 2027. So we also got a date for these movies. We'll see if they actually happen.
The payday around these is insane. Not only is Robert Downey Jr. rumored to be getting something like $80 million, did I read that correctly? The directors, Anthony and Joe Russo, returning, of course, hot off the set of Netflix's Gray Man, which we covered on this show. It's terrible. Are going to be doing Avengers Doomsday and Avengers Secret Wars. They're also going to make a fat stack of cash. They're talking about having, like, exclusive assistants. And I read something about Robert Downey Jr. having, like, a trailer encampment on set where you can have, like, three trailers to himself. Right, like just rolling out the red carpet, right, for the people who are going to save the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Not that it necessarily needs saving. Deadpool and Wolverine just came out and is doing pretty good. We'll talk about those numbers in just a second. Andy, how is Disney justifying spending this much money on these movies? How do they do that?
I mean, they know that people are, you know, it's about nostalgia, and unfortunately, it's kind of about what's familiar. Robert Downey Jr. was just a mainstay of the entire MCU, had an incredible send-off in 2019's Endgame. They figure it'll get audiences back on track, and Marvel is just, it's been struggling post-pandemic. Their properties aren't really hitting. They tried some new characters. They didn't, in my opinion, they didn't really invest in them very much, but they've lost their audience. But again, I will always track this failure back to Disney Plus and them not being able to focus on their movies as much. So I think it's a desperate play. It might work. It might be very successful, just as Deadpool and Wolverine has been, which we're going to talk about a little bit more in a second. It might just work because of who's in it. And Dr. Doom is a classic Marvel villain, equivalent to someone like the Joker. In DC. This is what I hear. I don't really know a lot about Dr. Doom, but I know he's like that level of a villain. Supposed to be very recognizable. He's got like the metal suit armor. I don't really know what his powers are, but he's a major antagonist. So it just might work. It also might bankrupt the studio because they're going to be spending a ton on this movie.
Well, I think the 35,000-foot view is, you're right, Disney Plus has been running Disney ragged. But like, to zoom way in on Marvel, I think immediate fans are going to want to know what happened to Kang, right? What happened to Jonathan Majors? That was supposed to be a whole thing. Ant-Man set him up in Quantumania. He had some stuff going on in Loki. He's been swapped out. Director Destin Daniel Cretton, who was supposed to do Avengers Kang Dynasty, is out. Joni and Anthony Russo are in. Our villain is out. Kang's out. We've got Doom back in. And most importantly, obviously, it's Robert Downey Jr. who formerly played Iron Man. It just seems like people are not that excited about this. I don't know if that's just me on Twitter and in my niche corner of the internet. I'm sure it is. But also, like, I just haven't seen anybody be like, oh, man, hooray. You know, like, nobody's really that stoked. It's like, oh, you're just trotting out the same thing again, you know? Do you think it's a bit... Is there a chance that maybe we get into theaters and this has all been a ruse? Because I don't think you spend this much money. I don't think you put this much gas behind it. I don't think you premiere this at SDCC for this to be a joke. I'm pretty sure this is like, that this is what they're doing, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could have picked any kind of main actor to do this. There were rumors that Cillian Murphy from Oppenheimer was going to be Dr. Doom. So, yeah, I don't think you do a bait and switch. I think if you're promoting Doom, especially for 2 years, you trot out who the person is and have them promote them. It seems real, real desperate, and it could completely go bust.
Yeah. Well, one more note on this before I move on. It's worth mentioning the two previous Avengers films made a combined total of $4.851 billion worldwide. If Disney turns out even half that, this will technically be a W. But what does it mean for the state of the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Are audiences truly interested, or are they just going to yawn and go to the next big feature? Keep it on off script for more. We'll let you know. With that, we're going to move on to a rather uncomfortable story that I just wanted to touch on briefly before we move on, because I've been pulling for this movie, and this really sucks. Variety had this story this week. Video of Francis Ford Coppola kissing Megalopolis extras surfaces as crew members detail unprofessional behavior on set. This is not good, dude. There's, like, video footage of, like, Coppola filming a party scene for the film. Megalopolis is just coming out in a couple of months. We've talked about it on the show. We're excited to check it out. It seems like it's going to be weird and indie, and he spent a bunch of money on it. But there's these videos now coming out from behind the scenes of him, like, going up and kissing extras. And he, like, gets on a megaphone, and he's like, yeah, I know it's weird, but it's just for me. No, dude, no. Like, you've been spending too much time out in the sun at your winery looking at grapes, all right? Like, that's not how we treat people. We don't move the medium forward by throwing aside standards and practices. Gross, man. Gross. I hope nothing else comes out of this. Andy, anything on this before we move on? Because I know it's weird. I just wanted to...
Yeah, all we know about some of these details, there was, like, a club scene being shot where there were a mix of, like, half-nude and More varying degrees of nudity in this scene, and Coppola was just kind of going up and hugging cast members and kissing cast members, extras. They were all women, coincidentally, and also apparently this was like ruining shots. Like, he would just go up in the middle, and it's just like, what are you doing? It'd be one thing if he was, I don't know, at least trying to direct a scene, but he's just like, can't contain himself, is going up and harassing people like mid. I don't know what is going through this man's mind other than he's just drunk with power, and I don't know, it is so bizarre. And this movie is already on real thin ice. It's came out of Cannes as like, this thing is a disaster, it's someone's pipe dream that's going nowhere, it's Heaven's Gate, it's you know, something like that. So it's already has a lot of really bad press, and now it's going to have even worse press going into its release, which is in about a month.
Yeah, dude, like, part of what's exciting about Megalopolis, it's entirely self-funded, $120 million for Coppola to make this masterpiece. But part of the problem that comes with that is, like, there's no real HR department. Somebody talked about that in this story. They said, who are you supposed to complain to? Like, Coppola himself? Like, this is just kind of the way it is. And while nobody else has really made a stink about it, like, it's uncomfortable, and it's not good, and it's bad. And like I said, I hope nothing else comes out about this or this film. I hope everybody who was involved has been, I feel like they've been fairly treated, because from the look of it, like, this reads real bad, dude. I don't like the sound of that. That's no good. One more story to get to this week. Actually, I'm sorry, just a couple more stories. Disney and Hulu and HBO are launching a streaming bundle. We actually covered this before on the show, and they had kind of recently announced it, but now we have an official price. We don't really have a name, but we know what it's going to cost. And as far as I know, it may include some savings for those ad-free fans like myself. Andy, what do you know about this?
So it is going to just be three separate services bundled together. You're not going to have like one mega app that has all of the like Disney, Hulu, and Max. It's just going to be three different separate apps on your phone. But if you sign up for the one with ads, you save a huge 40%, which is going to be $18 a month. If you want without ads, it's 30, which is basically the same, the a la carte price anyways. So they definitely want you getting the ads price, ads tier, because they get paid on both sides. They get paid from subscribers and they get paid from advertisers, and it's more overall. But this is part of a trend that we're seeing where streaming companies are trying to bundle together to try and say capture a bigger audience and just make these things profitable. Because as we've often said, no one besides Netflix is making streaming profitable.
Yeah, it's a pretty sweet deal for Disney, I think, because I think many people don't know on the ground, at least, that like Disney and Hulu are both Disney. So really what you're getting is two parts of Disney and one part of Warner Brothers. But Warner Brothers needs the help. We just covered last week how they've since acquired Discovery, and now they're looking to maybe split because they're too big. Disney obviously has two platforms that they want to promote. So yeah, it's a win-win for everybody. And if you're like me and go ad-free, it's pretty good. It's basically subscribe to two services, get one free. Like, that's a pretty sweet deal. But at the same time, looking at a deal like this immediately makes me like take stock of what I am subscribed to and what I do use, because I don't just have Disney and Hulu and HBO. I've also got Amazon, and we covered Arcadian this week on the show, so I just signed up for Shudder, a budget service, but still another one. I subscribe to Spotify. I'm pretty sure I'm subscribed to YouTube Premium. Like, at some point, it's too many subscriptions. It's too much, right? So while a bundle of three, like, I think does introduce the idea of saving some money, which is sweet, it does also prompt customers to question, hey, do I really need all three of these anyway? Because maybe I could just get three for the price of two, or maybe I could just cut a couple of these and save myself some real money and go somewhere else. Andrew, are you signing up for any of these? Do you think you're going to jump on this?
No. Well, I haven't been... I cut Disney Plus about 6 months ago, back in the fall when my subscription ran out, and I have not missed it since. Every now and then I'm like, oh, maybe I should re-watch this Marvel thing, and then I just don't care enough to sign up for it again. I have Max through my cable, or through my internet package, which actually is free with that. So no, I'm not going to be signing up for this, but if you're a new customer or even an existing person, you're looking to bundle for the whole family, it's a new deal. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of these bundle packages come together, except for Netflix, who refuses to bundle with anyone because they this is great. They've said, we're already a destination, a first stop for everyone, so we don't need to bundle with anyone else. You plebs.
God love you, Netflix. I may actually hit this bundle up. If I do, I'll cover it next week or the week after on the show. Like, I do have all three of these services. The math adds up. You do save money. It is worth subscribing. So I don't know. I might check it out. If you check it out, write into the show, would you? Hit the comments below. Let us know what you think. I'd love to hear more. One more story this week. Deadpool and Wolverine is absolutely crushing it at the box office, which, you know, I'm going to say safely as predicted on Off-Script Film Review, but for what it's worth, it's a safe prediction. I think everybody knew this was going to do numbers. Andy, how well is it doing?
It had a huge $211 million domestic opening, nearly $500 million globally. Fell short. It was about $440 million globally. So huge movie out of the first weekend. This is definitely going to be a $1 billion film for sure. One of the biggest, or the biggest R-rated opening ever, which was previously held by the first or second Deadpool films. So it's breaking a lot of records, but to me, it's not really rated R. It's like rated R. It's like PG-13 plus. So it's, but it's still holding those records. It will be huge. It's going to be one of the biggest movies of all time, definitely of the year. Not surprised by anyone. We still had some good holdovers from Twisters, which came in second at the box office, along with Despicable Me 3 and Inside Out 2, which are still, and rounded out by Longlegs, which is still doing numbers. It's just crossed 60 million. It's now the most profitable, successful film from Neon, the distributor, which was previously held by Parasite. And they're saying Longlegs could cross the 100 million mark. So we'll see, because that was made on just $10 million.
Can't believe Longlegs is Neon's biggest film ever. Long live Parasite. Love it. Love Parasite. Deadpool and Wolverine is a hard R, which is part of the reason these numbers are at least a little surprising. R-rated films typically don't do that well. What you're looking for is the four quadrant, right? You want to bring the whole family. You want mom and grandma and the kids to come. Like, that's who you want in Deadpool. And that's who's going to see it. There were a lot of kids in our screening of Deadpool, man, like almost an uncomfortable amount. But clearly audiences aren't scared of the cursing. Clearly they're not scared of the violence. They're not scared of the innuendo. Like, nobody's too worried about that, because people know that Deadpool and Wolverine is a pretty safe bet at the movies, right? You got your Hugh Jackman, you got Ryan Reynolds, you got the fun Marvel stuff. Disney's mentioned a lot. Like, that's all a good time. But I guess, Andy, are we looking forward to a future of R-rated mega hits? Is Hollywood going to take all the wrong lessons from this, or do you think we'll just quickly get back on track with our usual Marvel programming? I guess am I saying, is Deadpool and Wolverine an outlier content-wise, or do you think this is a pioneer for what may be coming next?
Well, I think it kind of highlights a problem with our rating system, is that the rating systems are too broad. PG-13 is a very wide array of what you can have something with rated R. In the UK, they have their system is 12, rated 12 and rated 15 and 18. Their 15 is like our rated R, and their 18 is like NC-17 essentially. So it's a very different system. And also there, you cannot actually just go in, like you have to be of age. Here, you can go in anything as long as you have the parent. But again, they knew that kids were going to be going to this. And so they, like I said, it's heavy on the violence, heavy on the F word. It's like a middle schooler who just discovered it. But notably, there is like no romance slash sex. Like that is completely cut out, because that would be, if that were explicit in the movie, that would definitely kill the four quadrantness of the movie. There's no portrayal of alcohol and drugs, really, which was a big, they reference it a lot, but there's no on-screen things like that. So this is what I mean. Like, it's kind of it's soft gloved rated R. It's PG-13 plus, because you're like, well, we still know that kids are going to be here, so we don't want to upset parents too much.
Right. And you don't want to upset global markets either, right? Like, if it's just in dialogue, you might be able to fix it in translation. You could just take out that little funny bit of dialogue that maybe China or Russia or whoever may not like. If it's on screen, well, that's a whole other reshoot. But Deadpool Wolverine, I think, plays it pretty safe in that way. What I do want to talk about is the ways it does not play things safe, which I think is probably the perfect, not quite the perfect segue, but a pretty good segue into our conversation about Deadpool and Wolverine. Andy's going to be taking the summary on this one. So Andy, please take it away.
Deadpool and Wolverine. So this is the 34th film, I believe, in the MCU. The long-awaited follow-up directed by Sean Levy, who I believe did one of the previous films. So we find Deadpool, as we know him in the Fox universe. I'm going to try to not get into the weeds too much. He is captured by the TVA, which we know from, would have watched the Loki shows. The TVA is a time variance authority, and they manage the multiple timelines of the multiverse, keep everything in check and in line. They inform Deadpool that, hey, Your timeline is coming to an end. It's going to be, we're going to have to prune it. It's going to have to be destroyed. Sorry. But we think you're important, so we're keeping you. He escapes. He finds some help he needs a Wolverine to help him save his universe. He kind of does a lot of universe jumping to find just the right one. Eventually lands on a Hugh Jackman that we know and love. And they actually get tossed into yet another conflict where they're thrown into a place called The Void and have to fight a bunch of other superheroes and anti-heroes, mutants, to escape there, save their world. The plot is a little thin beer. That's not really what this movie is about. This movie is about a lot of fan service, and I say that in a positive way. There's a ton of cameos that we've seen. Deadpool, of course, is the merc with the mouth. There's lots of jokes, lots of humor, lots of crude humor at that. And again, lots of fight scenes and lots of fun CGI. Lots going on. A lot of this works. Some of it doesn't. We'll get into it. Zach, what'd you think?
So I think Deadpool and Wolverine is in a funny position because it has to try to like hold up that what the Marvel universe has kind of been building to and make fun of it and point us at that and laugh at that, but also be the third Deadpool movie, figure out a way to bring back Wolverine, try not to be mean about Logan, which Deadpool has always been pretty soft hands around. In Deadpool 2, they had a whole joke with a statue and the whole thing. There's a lot to do. And I think Deadpool and Wolverine does that stuff really well. I actually think it navigates those waters pretty effectively, but I also think it's a bit of a one-trick pony. I think it's best experienced first time through. I think its rewatchability is going to be a little limited. I think you need to go see it before anything gets spoiled for you. And we're not spoiling anything here on this show. We don't do that. No spoilers here. But I think it's difficult to talk about because some of its best moments are things that surprise first time around that you really get to experience. And while it's chock full of that kind of stuff, we won't be able to kind of tell you what any of that is here, and it limits discussion. I feel like most of the reviews I've seen for Deadpool and Wolverine have had some kind of spoiler section near or on the end, or some kind of footnote or addendum, because people want to talk about some of the cameos, some of the exciting stuff that happens in this feature. And for a 2-hour run, it's a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, joke a minute, but also it's, I don't know. I don't think they can keep getting away with this. They can't turn Marvel movies into this. They can't like adapt this format into something like the Avengers aren't going to be doing what's happening in Deadpool and Wolverine. What's here is fun. I don't know how much runway it's got. That's what I think of Deadpool and Wolverine. So let's jump into it. What's the best place to start talking about it?
I want to start on the narrative side of this, which I've said is a little weak. You have kind of two antagonists. You have the TVA who's saying, we got to cut your timeline, and then they get thrown into this other world. And one of the things about this is it feels like I'm watching Saturday Night Live. We have a bunch of individual sketches or like 10 minutes of a scene that's funny, entertaining, some action. But then it doesn't all piece together. Like I feel like I'm watching a sketch show, and I kept waiting for the movie to start. I was like, any minute now, all right, we're ending act one, still waiting to get started into act two, halfway through, still wait. Like it feels like it's constantly getting started, and we never like, okay, what's our conflict? What's our antagonist? Like there, it's narratively really weak, and it's leaning heavily on like the jokes and the cameos and things like that. And one of the things I was saying just before the show is that a lot of these jokes you will need to be like over 35 to understand, because a lot of it is referencing things that are almost 30 years old, 25 years old, inside jokes, studio like inside jokes between studios, or this guy was supposed to play this character and never really happened, like jokes related to that kind of thing. It's kind of like in last year's The Flash movie when Nicolas Cage showed up as CGI Superman in a reference to that Superman project that never kind of came to pass. There's a lot of stuff like that that like you're not going to get if you're younger. And Zach's absolutely right. Like you cannot do this more than once, and you cannot keep doing this. Like you can't make a bunch of in jokes and a bunch of cameos endlessly. Like it works in this movie. You probably can't do it again.
I do think there's a bit of an emotional heart at the center of Deadpool and Wolverine. The film opens with Wade Wilson, our Deadpool, basically trying to get a job as an Avenger. That's kind of where we're starting with him, because things are on the rocks with his girlfriend, again, just like the last couple of movies, Morena Baccarin, who returns. And he's just trying to feel like what he does matters. And outside the suit, Wade Wilson is snarky, but he's a bit more like a lost puppy. Like you kind of feel bad for him a little bit because he doesn't really have a place. He's not really a hero. And that fits pretty good alongside this Wolverine that we're getting in this movie, because in an effort to kind of pay homage to Logan and stay away from that where the movie can, at least, we're getting a Logan from a different X-Men multiverse universe, right? Tapping into that multiverse, and we can get anybody from anywhere. And this Logan didn't do a great job of saving his people. So Deadpool doesn't feel like he has a place as a hero. This Logan does not feel like he has a very good place as a hero. And while that gives Ryan Reynolds some space in the open to be emotional, for the most part, he's got the costume on, he's got the mask on, it's fine. Jackman, however, still serving, dude. Jackman's great. Jackman's got a couple of great monologues in this movie, and it totally works. The things he's saying is ridiculous. He's talking about the multiverse and God knows what, but it's still delivered with conviction. Like, his scenes are still solid. Tons of fun. And additionally, I want to mention a few of the cameos in this movie. I feel genuinely heartfelt. They're goofy, sure, but they're all treated with respect. And everybody that shows up in this mostly has a chance to shine, like in their own special way. They're given pretty heartfelt send-offs for what they are. Like, I feel like all that works pretty good. The stuff that doesn't work is like the in-between and our setting, which is this just kind of like trash heap void of an area, like kind of like out of Mad Max.
It doesn't look as good. Yeah,
but it looks worse than Fury Road. You know, I don't know. Director Sean Levy formerly did Free Guy. You know, he's definitely not a stranger to working on big sets like this, working with big ideas. But it definitely does not look as good as something like Mad Max. It comes off looking a little flatter, I think, which is, you know, fine.
We have Fury Road at home.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I did want to talk about Jackman is excellent. He is bringing like Oscar level acting to this role, like way more than it deserves. And my only problem with that is not with him, but he's got this very tragic kind of backstory of how he kind of failed his universe. And it's all just told through dialogue. And I'm like, why are we telling and not showing? When are we? I was expecting like to have a cut or a flashback to the things he's talking about, which would have been really powerful. Like it's some really good like comic book kind of stuff. No, he just talks about it. We never see it. I was like, why this, you have all the money in the world. Why did you not depict this on screen? It would have been amazing. So it's like those kinds of choices. And yeah, when we get to the void, it, like this looks like we're in someone's backyard. Like this looks really kind of bad for something, even, you know, as something that's usually filmed on the volume or on a green screen. I'm just like, what are we doing here? Again, yeah. Waiting for the movie to get going.
Yeah, and it gets away with a lot of it through the script, right? We've got this kind of antagonist TVA character played by Matthew McFadden from Succession and the old Pride and Prejudice, right? That guy, Mr. Darcy.
Yep.
And he's fun in this movie for what he is, but he's definitely not as rough and tumble as everybody else. He's very staunch and stand up, and he's got an accent, and you know it's going to be this way, and that's fine. But between that, like, we don't get all that many places for things to happen in this movie. We get some recycled sets, which is fine. It plays pretty safe. I think what it does is it tries to leverage the script for a lot of this stuff. They talk about this space where ideas are discarded, and you see that like 20th Century Fox logo thing in the background, which is funny, but alienates a lot of people. You mentioned earlier that it feels like anybody under the age of 35 wouldn't get half these jokes, and I think that's true. Like, it is a joke a minute script through the whole first act. I was thinking of like Airplane, and then later it starts to feel more like Austin Powers because it is a superhero movie that's spoofing superhero movies. Like Austin Powers was a secret agent movie that's spoofing James Bond secret agent movies. It definitely feels like it wanders pretty far off the mark. But I do think, with that being said, I do think it's better than like Deadpool 2, which I feel like I've seen people say, no, Deadpool 2's got Cable in it, and that's fun. But like, dude, I can't remember hardly anything about Deadpool 2. At least this movie, I think, with Deadpool and Wolverine being a truly good matchup for heroes, they're a lot of fun together. They bounce off each other real good. I think you get like much better chemistry, and I think you do get a better feature for it. But I don't think you do this lightning in a bottle twice. It works exactly once, and I think they've leveraged it kind of perfect for what's here. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the it is a joke a minute. A lot of them, like I said, the dialogue feels like a 13-year-old who just discovered swear words. They say the F word a lot because it's rated R and they can, and it seems excessive. But like, again, there's a lot of violence, a lot of swearing, no romance, no kind of sexual anything. Everyone has their shirt on the entire time, just about. So you can still tell it's like a Disney movie. They don't want anyone getting excited in their movies. Their chemistry does work pretty well with Hugh Jackman playing the straight man to Deadpool. We get a bunch of fight scenes that are really kind of forced. Like, we see them fight each other a couple of times. We see them team up and take on other people. Those are kind of hit and miss. Some of them are pretty good and entertaining, but they're mostly entertaining when they're funny, when there's a lot of jokes and kind of cameo gags pulled into that. But like on their own, there's a little bit of like, why are we fighting again, other than to just like, it feels like people smashing their action figures together, unless like these characters need to have a conflict in order to move the story forward and somehow.
Yeah. And for a 2-hour runtime, like, I don't think that's terrible, right? It's summer, we're at the movies, we're eating popcorn, we want to turn our brain off, we just want to watch something fun. Deadpool and Wolverine's a good time. I think it's good. I really do. But I don't know if I'll be revisiting it anytime soon. I feel like I kind of got,
no.
I got everything out of it in one pass. I think most people will be that way. You may go tell your friends, man, it's a ton of fun. Go see it. But in the next few weeks, as the cameos get rolled out on Twitter and you can see screenshots of everybody who's in it and behind the scenes of how this actor is appearing in Deadpool and Wolverine and thought that their thing was never going to get revived again, like, all of that loses its luster, and pretty soon what's left at the core of it is a good superhero movie. And that's all it needs to be, I think, especially considering how much money it's making. But like James Gunn's Guardians films, like, I don't know if they get away with more of these. I feel like this feels like a pretty good close off for like our little Deadpool trilogy with Ryan Reynolds. I don't know, Andy. Are we seeing more Deadpool in the future? Do you think Marvel learns anything from this? And then I guess we'll roll into recommendations.
You can't make a billion-dollar movie and not expect them to follow up. Like, you can only do the cameo stuff once, a lot of the jokes, because it's a lot of people have said this is like a love letter to 20th Century Fox and all those projects that were or never came to be. And it's kind of like saying farewell. And we have moved both Deadpool and Wolverine into the MCU. So, I mean, you definitely got to bring them back. Like, they're too profitable not to. The question is kind of how. Does Deadpool have his own movies, or do you just roll him into some sort of team film, which I think at this point might actually work a little bit better.
Yeah. Oh, I would bet Disney's working on a team film right now. I think they probably feel the same way. While I don't know if it'll work again, I think what works here is good. The question is, Andy, would you recommend Deadpool and Wolverine?
I would recommend it to fans of superhero films. If you've watched the rest of the MCU stuff or even a casual thing, you're going to have a good time. I definitely laughed and there was good action. It's funny. The cameos are a lot of fun, but this part of the reason the movie only works once is like the surprise is half the bit. Narratively, it's pretty weak. It's a little confusing about what's going on. There's too many antagonists. The plot's kind of convoluted. Maybe it doesn't matter in the end, but I was definitely kind of bored for about the first hour, and I kept waiting for the movie to start. But overall, I'd recommend.
I'm a little warmer on it. I think it's a good time. I do think you should go see it ASAP, and you should try to avoid the internet for as long as possible between now and then, because everything that gets spoiled for you takes a significant chunk out of this movie. The cameos, that stuff is a lot of fun. The jokes, and if they're ruined for you, I think it's a lot less fun. I don't think it works as good second time around, but for what's here, flash in the pan, a lot of fun. Deadpool 3. Not too shabby. Would recommend. And with that, we should move into our middle segment of the episode. Andy, what do we typically call this?
It's time for the trailer park.
Perfect. The first trailer we are talking about this week is A Complete Unknown, which Andy put on the outline, and I completely forgot until he reminded me. It's that Bob Dylan movie. That Bob Dylan movie that Timothy Chalamet has been shooting like forever, right? That's what that is. We have a trailer for the Bob Dylan biopic. It's 1965. A wild-haired brunette named Bob Dylan moves into town and meets Pete Seeger, played by Edward Norton. Pete discovers that he's a bit of a talent, puts him on stage, and he electrifies the world with his folksy sound. The film stars Timothy Chalamet. I'm pretty sure it's a musical. Looks like a music biopic to me, you don't get a whole lot of musical numbers, as is typical, I think, for a musical trailer, but he sings, he dances, not quite like Wonka, but certainly like Bob Dylan. The movie is A Complete Unknown. Andy, what do you think of this trailer?
It's really impressive, or Timothy Chalamet is very impressive, because he sings like through half the thing, like and he's doing the Bob Dylan voice, and he's like nailing it. Everyone's praising his voice work for this, for sounding like a lot like Bob Dylan. And in some of the later iterations, he adopts the look. It looks pretty impressive. It also looks really cliche. A lot of people have been saying like this looks exactly like the Walk Hard story, the Dewey Cox story, which is a spoof of these films from like 2004. It's pretty old now, but it's a big spoof. And also there was already kind of a Bob Dylan biopic that was, I can't remember the name of it, but it was very abstract and kind of out there. And the whole thing was like, well, this is a character you can't really do a traditional thing. So we had to do this weird version. It's like Kate Blanchett plays Bob Dylan. A bunch of people do in that version. And so it's weird to just kind of come back to then a more traditional tell of this. It looks fine. We'll see how cliche it is, but he's definitely nailing the look and the voice.
The movie you're referring to is 2015's I'm Not There, which, yeah, is a movie where Bob Dylan is like a rotating cast of characters, similar to Heath Ledger's character and the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. Like, we'll just swap them out. And the movie is called Him Not... That's like part of the bit. It's art. I get it. Complete Unknown looks fine. I'd like to see another trailer for what it's worth. I don't think I've seen a bad Timothy Chalamet performance maybe ever. I'm sure he'll be great in it. It'll probably make some good money. But will it make a lot of music biopic money? Time will tell. One other trailer to talk about. Andy, what do we got?
We also have the second trailer to Joker Folie à Deux, which is the long anticipated Joker sequel, which comes out October 4th. This new trailer, we get to see a lot more footage of Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn and Joaquin Phoenix as Arthur Fleck. We don't get a ton of plot details still, which is what I wanted to see more of, but it does look like Arthur Fleck will be going on trial, and that's going to be a big part of the movie. We see a lot more of the dance numbers, which seems to kind of be happening in their heads, or they're like the Joker and Harley Quinn are dancing together, singing together, but it's really they're the only ones who are seeing this performance. Again, it's under wraps as far as more of the plot, but I think this movie looks really good. After seeing so much kind of like CGI slop, I was like, oh man, they're like filming on the bridges, on location. Like they got real cars and stuff. And I think it looks good. I'm really excited for it, but I just don't know what kind of direction it's going in.
Yeah, I think Joker looks like a lot of fun. Notably shot, at least parts of it, in IMAX. I'd really like to go see it there because you actually get that full aspect ratio. Todd Phillips is doing different work, man. He's just doing something different. It's different than what he used to do. Joker was obviously a departure from his previous work on things like Old School. This looks to be even more of that. Visually, I've heard, like Andy said, it's very different. Like, it's very new. It's very fresh. Like, I don't know. Sounds rad. Could be good. I have not watched the original Joker film since I saw it back in theaters, but obviously it gets some praise. Might have to rewatch before this comes out in October. October 4th is the trailer listed at the end of this, or the date listed at the end of this trailer. So that's when it's coming. And with that, we should move into our final segment of the episode. I'm going to be taking the summary on this one, so please excuse my delivery. The movie is Arcadian. So, Arcadian is the story of Paul, an older gentleman in a seemingly war-torn world of pollution or disdain and decay. Something has gone wrong in the world of Arcadian, but we don't really get a look at it because what we see is Paul and his two sons, Joseph and Thomas, I think are their names, who are a set of twin boys who he kind of comes across one day. It's not really clear if they're his sons or if he just happens to find them in the rubble, but they hole up at a little farmhouse in where they shot was Northern Ireland, so a beautiful setting, where everything seems to be pretty normal. There's a farm down the road with a cute girl that one of the boys has taken a liking to, and everything seems pretty good until night falls, in which case the boys have to get inside, lock all the doors, lock all the windows, and hunker down because that's when the beasts come out. Arcadian is a uniquely small budget. It is a small feature. Nick Cage jumped onto it when Mike Nichols, his agent and producer of a few of his films, wrote the script for this. That's when he jumped into it. Our two boys are played by one of them, Game of Thrones boy, right? Jaden Martell. Actually, I think he's, it's not Game of Thrones. It's
It.
What am I thinking of?
He's in It.
Yes. He's in It. That's it. And the other boy is Maxwell Jenkins as Thomas, who I don't know.
He's done a lot of TV.
He's done a lot of TV. Yes. He did that Lost in Space show on Netflix when that was hot. That's kind of our core cast, small budget feature. Our ultimately, I should say, where are we going with our plot? Due to certain events, Paul gets injured and our boys have to take what they learned from their father and survive the night. That's functionally our plot. It is like 90 minutes. It's available on Shudder. And while I do want to talk about Shudder as a platform, we should first talk about the film. Andy, what did you think of Arcadian?
I think there's a lot of good ideas in here, but the execution's it's a little shaky. We do have this interesting family unit where you have Nicolas Cage, the father to these two young boys, but they're kind of coming of age. They're at that age where they're, you know, becoming rebellious. Jaden Martell's Joseph is kind of the more responsible one. He comes home on time. He helps out with he's a little bit of a tinkerer and scientist. He gets like the tractor working. I mean, does exactly what his dad says. Thomas is, he's a rebellious teenager. He stays out longer than he should. He's caught the eye of a cute girl at the Rose Farm. He fights with his dad. So it's as much of a family drama as it is a creature feature. And it seems very inspired from something like The Village, the movie by M. Night Shyamalan, where there's some creatures that come out at night that we have to hide from. And so we get a lot of that. We always see our doors scratched up and we hear creaking and they pound on the door at night. Unfortunately, the movie does reveal them to us kind of early in the film, which to me kind of ruined it. I think they should have left the surprise a little bit longer. But they, you know, like most things that come at night, they're things that they will eat anyone and anything, and they're just trying to get food, get hungry. So you have the creature feature along with this family drama kind of going on. It mostly works.
Yeah, I think Arcadian's biggest problems come from its pacing. Even though it's 90 minutes, it ends up feeling like a long feature because there's a lot that goes on. It's set over probably about the course of 3 days. And while we don't get a good look at our creature at first, they do kind of reveal it sooner rather than later, and tragically, because it's a low-budget feature, it ends up looking more like... It reminded me of, like, the first season of Stranger Things. You kind of got the Demogorgon, but, like, you never really get a good look at the Demogorgon. You know what I mean? And when you do see it, it's, like, blurry because it's moving fast, and it's, like, crappy CGI. Like, it's a shutter joint. I don't expect the monster in Arcadian to look incredible, but Andy's right. They kind of reveal it early, and I think it would have been better to kind of soft pedal it. Give me something like A Quiet Place, right? Our little family out in the cabin in the woods, just away from everybody. Or even like Signs, the M. Night Shyamalan joint, right? Like, don't really show us until the end. Like, let that build up. Arcadian does give it to you early. And actually, with what I should say is a pretty engaging end to our first act. Basically, one of our boys ends up staying out later than he should have, right? And Nicolas Cage's character, Paul, has to go out and find him, and they end up getting in this whole scrap, and that's all pretty good. That all plays pretty well. But then you have, like, another 48 minutes of movie to go. And, like, yeah. When you already showed us the creature, like, you already showed us the evil, you know, like, it's hard to continue ramping up on that. I don't know. I think that's kind of its biggest issue. And by the way, I should say that I said the writer was Mike Nichols. I'm wrong. It's Mike Nylon. That's his name. Excuse me. It's Cage's agent and longtime producer who put this together. And it's directed by Benjamin Brewer, who is not a big director, but it's notable because he was the visual effects lead on Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is kind of cool. There's a lot of great visual effects in that feature. And the visual effects in this movie work good. While the monster is fine, I should say the other issue is it's a lot of handheld. The whole movie shot in handheld. And it's like, there's scenes where not only is it shaky, I think they enhanced it after the fact. Like, an added a shaky cam filter in certain bits that maybe shakier were steadier. Cam. Yeah, and like, it just makes for a lot of like quiet movie feeling grounded, and that doesn't, I don't think the illusion works over 90 minutes. I think I kind of fell out of it a little.
Yeah, the pacing is definitely a bit of a problem. Again, I think the ideas are good. The execution is kind of what falters. Our relationship between our two sons and father, played by Nicolas Cage, isn't really well established a lot. It needs to take longer to be like, okay, this is the rebellious teen. This is a more kind of obedient son. And also the conflict with the other farm, where they are a family of four and they have a young daughter, and they kind of have, their farm is bigger, they have more food, things are clearly going a little bit better for them than our folks. And it just, again, there's a family drama that isn't really sketched out as good as it could have been. The end kind of rushes. Or the end is the third act is where we have a lot of action. Actually, we have our threat of our creatures, as well as human threats that come about. It all seems kind of rushed by the time we get there, and I was like, oh, this is where all the production and budget went into, and it's backloaded, and so it means the front is a little bit slower and suffers pacing wise.
Yeah, and Andy and I are like, well, come on, who doesn't love a good Survive the Night movie? Love a good Survive the Night movie. But like, even when it comes down to it, I think Arcadian kind of misses it because it wants to spend more time on kind of the larger drama of these human beings that have been kind of stretched thin by a world gone mad. I totally see that. But like, being the budget that it is, it doesn't show us the world gone mad. We just get a lot of remote scenes set in Northern Ireland. And it's like, yeah, things are crazy back in town, you know, and you never really really get to go there. Like, that's something that even like Quiet Place and Signs is not a post-apocalyptic feature, but handle well, right? In Quiet Place, they do go into town. They've got to go into the pharmacy and get some meds. Signs has that awesome scene where like Mel Gibson stumbles into M. Night Shyamalan, who caught one, right? And it's locked up in the kitchen. Like, you do get this like good soft pedal of like more danger coming at you. And Arcadian's like a little tipped in the opposite way. I will say one thing that does work well. I do think the acting is good for what's here. Jaden Martell is rock solid coming out of it. Maxwell Jenkins is good. Is kind of the more flagrant brother who doesn't mean to blow off the rules, but like clearly longs for more than living on a farm hiding away from everything. And then, of course, there's Nick Cage's Paul, who does not have that many scenes, but he's got a couple good monologues. He like smokes these hand-rolled cigarettes he's got. Like, you can tell Nick Cage like really is, you know, he was getting into the role of like this post-apocalypse father who's just out and away from everything. Like, it's clearly something he sees and wanted to be a part of. IMDb claims he spent 3 months living with his family in solitude just to practice for this movie, which does not sound like fake Trent Cage news, but for what's here, it surprises me, because I don't think he needed to commit to 90 days of...
I was like, I feel like he could do this in his sleep.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm not convinced by that news, but if that's what he says, then that's what happened. Overall, I think Arcadian is fine, but I get why I didn't see it in the theater. I think if I had seen this in the theater, I probably would have thought less of it. I should talk about this as a Shudder feature, right? Because we watched it on Shudder. I guess since it's a streaming joint, Andy, do you find yourself being a little bit softer on it? What do you think?
Yeah, a little bit. I would definitely, if I saw this in theaters, I would be not super happy about having paid a ticket price. But yeah, it's perfect for streaming, because it's like a little big movie. You got a big star, you got some big ideas, you got a big third act ending. But it's also cut in corners. In other ways, it's a little bit shorter than maybe it should be to kind of establish these relationships. The cast is very small. There's only like 3-4 people on screen. Everyone else is a small unknown actor to make way for Cage, who I'm sure took a big pay cut to be able to do this. But yeah, it's fine for streaming for sure.
I think so. Andy, would you recommend Arcadian?
It's save it for streaming. Again, it's streaming on Shudder right now, which is a horror streaming service. They need to pay us for this promo. It has some good ideas, not perfectly well executed, but it's enjoyable. It does have some good scares. Again, it's a creature feature. It's a drama. All our actors are committing to what they're doing. It's a shame it doesn't have a bigger budget. We could have a little bit more of an expansive world. But I would recommend it to horror heads.
Yeah, I think Arcadian's fine for streaming. That's what I think. It's 90 minutes. You can throw it on pretty soft. You might want to make sure your room's real dim, because there are bits that are particularly dark, being a feature where the creatures come out at night. Obviously, you got a bit of hiding things in the CGI, but overall, like, fun and fine. And yeah, if I had paid a ticket price, I think I'd be a lot harsher. I'd be like, this is not awesome. This is not a great feature for what Shudder is capable of. You know, you see Skinamarink in theaters, you see Late Night with the Devil in theaters. Like, you feel like, okay, like, there is a level where, like, it's still low budget and it's still small, but there's a certain, I don't know, there's a certain like level or power of art that we want to get behind to put it in theaters. I don't think Arcadian is quite there, but what's here is good. And from what I've seen on Shudder, it is probably one of the better features available on there. There's a lot of good stuff, for what it's worth. Andy's right, this isn't sponsored by Shudder, but a lot of good stuff on there. I think you could do worse with Arcadian. And odds are, if it's doing as well as we think, and that we covered it on this show, we heard about it, it'll probably get licensed out to somebody else soon, right? It'll be on Netflix in 4 months or something. You'll see it on the front page, like, oh yeah, there's that Shudder movie. They've done that before. So yeah, that's Arcadian. And that's Off Script episode 262. I want you all to know, I mean this, there are a lot of reviewers out there who would have done Arcadian first and then Deadpool and Wolverine and made you stick around, right? They would have said, hey, no, that's right, you got to wait through the ad break and you got to listen to everything. Not here. Not us, baby. No, we give it to you straight. That's how we do it on Off Script Film Review. Andy, what are we watching next week?
Before I get into that, I did want to briefly touch on Shudder, the horror streaming service that we watched on this. I did browse the rest of it. I signed up for the free trial, and they have a pretty good library. There's a bunch of stuff that I want to catch up on, things like Possession, Perfect Blue, a bunch of other things, Skinamarink, that I've been meaning to rewatch, but I'm a little bit too scared to. So pretty good horror selection if you're into that genre. I was... I was pretty impressed with the selection.
Yeah, same. I do need to go rewatch Phil Tippett's Mad God on there. I'm excited to check that out. I did admittedly throw on Late Night with the Devil and get a bit of a rewatch on for that movie. Tons of fun. Yeah, I need to spend some time poking around Shudder. 7-day free trial, and it's like $6 a month or something after that. So you know, you can give it a go. You can check out Arcadian, see what it's about, and then you know, duck. But what do you want to watch next week, Andy?
So we're actually taking next week off because I'm going to be doing some traveling, but we'll be back on August 13th with two features, both horror, M. Night Shyamalan's Trap, which comes out this week, starring Josh Hartnett. That's the they're trying to catch a serial killer at this big pop star concert. Tons of press around that film. And then August 9th is Cuckoo, which is the new Hunter Schafer, Dan Stevens a horror movie, which we don't really know. Hunter Schafer and family move out to the country or somewhere in the woods. Something's not right with the town. They're experimenting on people. Something like that's going on. It's definitely got big Final Girl vibes. Looks scary. Looks intense. Definitely excited for that. And another FYI release, Borderlands, comes out August 9th for anyone interested in that. I kind of like the way that looks, but I'm probably waiting for streaming. Myself.
Yeah, Borderlands might be an off week for us. I look forward to every episode of Offscript. I do. But just imagining the thumbnail for Trap and Cuckoo double feature like has me salivating, dude. So I'm very much looking forward to the break, get some things in life in order over here, come back on the 13th with Trap and Cuckoo. It's going to be a banger episode. We'll get around to Borderlands. I played all those games, dude. I got to watch it at some point. We will cover it. If you want to hear our future Borderlands review or review for Trap, Cuckoo, you want to hear about things we got upcoming, huh? Heading into that winter season, big movies, big things happening. The best way to do that is subscribe to Offscript Film Review on your favorite platform or podcast distribution center, right? For our audio folks at home, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartMedia, wherever you're listening to this right now, there's a subscribe button somewhere around here. I know it. I know it exists. You can hit that. You can rate and review if you like. Drop us a 5-star, you know, what have you. Whatever you feel is appropriate. I feel like if I was reviewing the show, it'd be 5 stars, but it's up to you. We're on social media, Facebook and Instagram, TikTok. We got Twitter. All right. We're on YouTube. Big things going on YouTube. Go sub there. And of course, you can follow us on all the usual social media places as well. You can check out our website, offscriptfilmreview.com, for additional interviews and content. And you can mail us correspondence directly, huh? Let us know what you think of the show. Direct feedback from you to us, the way it's meant to be, at mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. It's right. Good old fashioned email from all of us at Offscript, the home of Bold Cinema. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.